Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, and earned BA degrees in communications and political science from the University of Notre Dame. Since 2009, she's been a media relations coordinator and donor liaison in the patron's office in the Vatican. The only American laywoman that works in the Vatican's Apostolic Palace. Her name, Carolina Rea. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Carolina Rea, the only American woman that works in the Vatican's Apostolic Palace. Wow. Welcome. What an honor to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And welcome home.
Thank you. Good to be home.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Absolutely. Well, my childhood, as you mentioned, I grew up in Bloomfield Hills. I'm a lifer of, and graduate of the Academy of the Sacred Heart, right in Bloomfield Hills as well. And I had a really, let's say, normal childhood here in Michigan and Midwest, born and raised. I come from a Catholic family, and we were mass going on Sundays. And lo and behold, I made the big leap after University of Notre Dame and a couple of years of work experience here in Michigan, from here straight to Rome to work at the Vatican.
You've got an amazing mom and dad.
Thank you.
Tony and Suzanne. What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
That's a tough question because they've been with me my whole experience, and I feel like I'm continually learning from them. Maybe the best thing, lesson I've learned from both of them combined is actually my faith, just how to live it out every single day, and try to just be the best I can to other people and to be edifying of the church. Specifically from my dad, I think my dad is totally a great man, a great businessman. So I've learned a lot, I think, just about the work experience from him and watching him, and also for specifically philanthropy, which has been amazing, which directly has helped me in my career. With my mother, she has a lot of patience and grace, and that also I need to take with me every day, although I don't have as much as she does, so.
You graduated from the University of Notre Dame.
Yes.
In 2001. What'd you do for the next 8 years after that?
I worked locally in the Detroit area. So I worked for my dad's company for a bit. And I learned some really valuable lessons there. Most specifically, humility. I sort of came into the job thinking, boss's daughter a little bit without being fully aware of it. But I got put in my place by my father, and that's all it took. So I worked for his company. It's construction and development. And I worked on the real estate end of that. And I worked at a startup online website company based out of Michigan with a bunch of wonderful local talents. And I worked my way up to director of operations there. And so I got a lot of experience in marketing and overseeing groups of people and lots of ebbs and flows of a startup company.
When you got out of Notre Dame, what were your dreams? What did you want to do with your life?
I think that's what led me to the Vatican, specifically that thought, because I graduated thinking you're just supposed to find this great job, be happy. You know, everything just sort of falls into place once you graduate from college. You know, you've done all the work and now it's going to just come to you. And I realized I wasn't so happy after I graduated, that it wasn't this great happy experience of, you know, getting into the workforce. And that really compelled me to search beyond and look for a real lasting and fulfilling happiness that was beyond a paycheck and beyond, you know, the day-to-day 9-to-5. I needed something that also fed me in other ways.
You're here in Detroit. You're in your 20s. And you get a job in the Vatican. The only American woman working in the Apostolic Palace. Carolina, how did you ever do that?
Well, I have to first correct you. I'm actually the only American laywoman that's working there. There are other women that are there, mostly clergy, so that would mean nuns, and other consecrated women. And there are other women that do work with the Vatican from a distance that technically their office space would be considered there, but I'm the only full-time employed person that goes in on a day-to-day basis in this way. What led me here is actually in that quest that I was just mentioning after I had graduated from college, and I just thought, you know, this is it. This is supposed to be the experimenting time of my life in my 20s, looking for my career path and finding my own way and getting my first apartment or home. All of those things didn't seem to feed a happiness that I had a need for. And so I went to my local parish priest, who's a very good family friend. He actually came to me and invited me just to come over for tea for about 20 minutes. And it became sort of a routine. And through that, he just asked me questions. And through that, he started asking me the right questions, and very gently. And I ended up deciding that I wanted to not only work for the church, but specifically at the Vatican. So I set off on a course to fulfill that dream and that goal.
Carolina, so many young people today feel that they can't follow their dream, that it's unattainable. Talk to us about following your dream.
I think following your dream is absolutely paramount. I have a father that came from another country that had to support his family and himself and his education and really pull himself up by the bootstraps. And, you know, the American dream, and I do believe it still exists. And even though my dream led me across the ocean, it's so important for kids today to not just sit back and become complacent, but if they want something, to go after it and get it. Failure isn't scary. It's a hard lesson.
We're talking to Carolina Rhea. When we come back, we'll ask her about Pope Benedict XVI. When she went there in 2009. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Carolina Rhea, who since 2009 has worked in the Vatican. Tell us about Benedict XVI.
Benedict XVI is an amazing, amazing man and intellect. I had the honor of meeting him several times, maybe three or four times. And he's a very pious man. Unfortunately, I feel that his place in history sort of maybe has led people that haven't followed him very much to think that he wasn't such a great pope, unfortunately. But if you've been bookended by Saint John Paul II on one side and Pope Francis on the other, again, I just think that's circumstantial. He has contributed so many wonderful intellectual, ecumenical, and canonical writings for the church, and it's just been amazing to watch. And he's also, I know, got a bad rep because he's considered more of a conservative pope, but meeting the man face to face, he was loving, and very soft and a wonderful, warm spirit.
You mentioned, Carolina, that you met with him 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
You've met with Pope Francis 4 or 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
When you meet with the Pope, what do you say to him?
That was the question that I had, actually. The first time I was meeting John Paul II, prior to working at the Vatican, a priest said to me, "What are you going to say to the Pope?" So when I met John Paul II, I was unable to speak because it scared me so much as to what do I have to offer to bring to the table. Then I decided after that meeting where I got tongue-tied that I would never, ever, ever have that situation again. So when I met with Pope Benedict, prior to meeting with him, I had gone to all of the guards because at this point I know the guards that are around him, and I said, "Don't you dare pull me away from him." So when I got up to the front of the line, I introduced myself, I spoke Italian to him, and I thanked him for the honor of working for him in the Apostolic Palace and the patrons of the Arts Office. And he actually knew exactly where my office was located, and he was warm and interactive. So it was a great encouragement for me to continue. So the next several times that I met him, I actually continued where I had left off in the prior conversation.
When you're in the elevator in the Apostolic Palace and the door opens and in walks the Pope, what does he say to you? What do you say to him?
I haven't seen the Pope in the elevator, but I have seen a lot of people that are meeting with the Holy Father. So I've actually ridden the elevator with a lot of diplomats. Most often, unfortunately, I don't recognize them because they're not people that we necessarily have in our news every single day. But always greeting with a smile and a simple, the Latin greeting, salve, is a very good way to go. And also, if I were to ever just run into the Pope, prega per me, pray for me. And also, I would let him know that I was praying for him as well.
March 12th, 2013. And March 13th, 2013, we had the conclave inside the Vatican. There were 115 cardinals. They voted 5 ballots. And at 7:06 p.m., they announced, "We have a new pope." Talk about those couple days and being in the Vatican for those couple days.
This was the most electric moment in all of my time at the Vatican. Literally, all eyes were on the Vatican. I think we had over 6,000 journalists. And when I would look out the windows from my office, I could actually see the TV lights in all directions coming towards the Apostolic Palace. Because, of course, this is where Pope Emeritus and all of the prior popes had lived and where the heartbeat of the Vatican really stands. Physically stands in Vatican City. Every day going into work, we actually didn't know what to expect. So when I would arrive, it takes me 12 minutes to walk through from the gate at St. Anne's up to my office. I have to pass several guards of different factions every single day. And things were sort of changing as we went along. So when I went in one day, all of the doors became automatic and they were push button entry. Then I came in another day and all of the windows were fogged because, of course, during the conclave, everything is a secret and you're not allowed to see in or out. So all of the windows that would look out into anywhere where the cardinals were completely fogged. Then I came in another yet the following day, and all of the sudden I had to go climb up hundreds and hundreds of stairs in an ancient winding tower to get up to my office. So it was really interesting to see. One of my best memories was a Swiss guard, when I walked in, clenching a rosary and saying it. And I had unfortunately just interrupted him by walking up. Everything echoes there because of all of the marble. And it really felt like we didn't have a father. It was really interesting. They ripped out all of the gardens with the crests, took down all of the papal flags because, of course, it's the empty seat. It was a real moment of pause and waiting. And then going from that sentiment directly to the moment that the smoke came, I can't tell you, it's more of a triathlon. I mean, Rome was completely jammed. It was running. Because it was at night, we had already left from work that evening. I had gone home, and I was just checking on my dog before I was coming back. And I was in a cab with a girlfriend, and we made an agreement. Run as fast as your feet can take you and don't look back. So either one of us, you know, whoever got up to the front first, just get the best seat you can. As the announcement was coming and we heard about the smoke, we were in the cab on the way. We threw money at the cab driver, ran out of the cab, and just came running down the street. And that was the story of so many people running and running and running and out of breath and arriving there just to see a glimpse of the smoke and what was happening right in St. Peter's Square.
They announced that Jorge Bergoglio from Argentina is the new pope, and he's going to take this name, Pope Francis. What was the first impression?
Well, the first thought actually in the square, I was standing in the square, and when they announced the name, of course, everybody has their guesses on who it's going to be. And when they said Bergoglio, everyone was like, who? Who is that? That was the very first thing that happened. And I was standing with my boss, Father Mark, in the audience, and he said, Bergoglio. And word in our little section sort of spread like fire, and it was wonderful. It was a Latin American, and that felt close to us, as my boss and I, as Americans. And there was just a great joy and excitement that we had a new pope and a new leader and a new boss in our case. And all of the people around us, it was like World Youth Day. Everybody, they were college students, and the face of the church was literally in the square. And it was just a moment of quiet and complete unity and peace, and like we were ship with a captain again.
We're talking to Carolina Ria, who works in the Vatican. When we come back, we'll ask her about Pope Francis. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Carolina Ria, who works at the Vatican in the Apostolic Palace. Pope Francis has captured the world, and he surprises us every other day. He gave a long interview with the Jesuit magazine, where the editor, Antonio Spadari, sat down with him two or three times. It's like a 20-page article. And Spadari writes, he said, the first thing I asked him was, who is Jorge Bergoglio? The Pope stares at me in silence. I ask him if this is a question that I'm not allowed to ask. He nods that it is, and he tells me, I don't know what might be the most fitting description. Then he says, I'm a sinner. This is the most accurate definition. It's not a figure of speech, a literary genre. I'm a sinner. Carolina, tell us about this sinner, Pope Francis.
I think that we could say that humility is Pope Francis's trademark. We have seen this through his actions since the day of his election. I had a personal experience in that the morning after he was elected and I walked in, I was there early in the morning. It was about 7:25, 7:30, and the offices open at 8 o'clock in the morning in the Apostolic Palace. So I was there relatively early, and it was very quiet because of all of the excitement the night before. And my office is just around the corner from the Sistine Chapel. And as I walked up, there were two custodians that were rolling a big white chair with gold thread, simple gold thread just around the edge, down that hallway. And I said to them, "Is that the..." And they said, "Yes, this is the chair from the Sistine Chapel, and he wouldn't sit in it." And I knew that there was a different Pope that day, for sure. So humility has really been the trademark of Pope Francis. In his case, it's definitely not a show, but I think rather it expresses the central conviction of the Catholic faith that he's living out. And this theme goes hand in hand for him with the theme of a merciful God. He's constantly calling us to go and ask for confession, for forgiveness. I think it also, you know, where there's great sorrow at having sin comes greater appreciation for him who is able and willing to give us forgiveness.
There's a story that when he was elevated to the papacy, the official, you know, elevation, where every cardinal was there and 120 delegates from 120 countries, hundreds of delegates from 120 countries were there, he asked that he wanted to have lunch, the first lunch, officially as the Pope, with the president of Argentina, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, who had regularly fought and verbally attacked him for the 7 previous years that he'd been the Cardinal of Buenos Aires. He asked to have lunch with her first. They spent 2.5 hours together, one-on-one. In the previous 6 years, he had asked her to meet with him 14 times, and she had refused every time. Why did he meet with her?
Well, you know, it was a little bit confusing for everybody, I think. But naturally, that's his homeland, his home turf. And I know that the Kirchner and the political party had painted Cardinal Bergoglio at that time as contrary to everything the people, and contrary to modern life, and contrary to what the voters in Argentina wanted. And I think she realized that when he had been elected Pope, and the Argentines and all of South America and all of the Americas and all of the world essentially were so excited, but particularly in Argentina, that her own people were so excited and so happy, I think she realized how out of touch she was. And her party really was. Maybe there was a little bit of political gain for her, or saving face for her by meeting with the Holy Father at that point. But I definitely think, you know, Pope Francis also extended an olive branch, and I think he's refusing to play politics by having had a gesture like that and just saying, hey, you know, we can work together.
Your job, Carolina Ria, in the Apostolic Palace is a media relations coordinator and donor liaison in the Patron's Office of the Vatican. Tell us about the patrons of the arts in the Vatican museums.
Well, we fund the restoration of the works of art under the Holy Father's care. That primarily, those works of art are in the Vatican museums, but also are in the main basilicas outside of Rome and other places where the museums have been asked to step in. So we really, because of our large collection, we have the largest collection of High Renaissance art in the world, and the largest collection of indigenous artworks as well. We have a lot of maintenance, not to mention how many ancient works of art we have. So we have a group of people that come together and support the restoration and the upkeep and the maintenance, and also make it accessible to the public, which has been a goal of the Pope since Julius II.
If you want to learn more, www.vatican-patrons.org. Vatican-patrons.org. The Vatican Museums, 54 galleries, one of the most phenomenal buildings in the world. Tell us about the Vatican Museums.
They are alive. We have, I think on an average day, around 15,000 people, and sometimes that number can swell upwards of 30,000. As I've mentioned, the popes really want to keep this open for the public. It's been since Julius II that this has been a mission, and it's really the art of the people. And so in that vein, you know, a lot of our buildings have suffered because we keep opening the doors to the public, but it's really a mission, and we're the oldest museums in the world, and so we do lead the pack in many respects, and in terms of restoration, we're always on the cutting edge as well.
We're talking to Carolina Rio. When we come back, we'll ask her about the Sistine Chapel, and her office is right around the corner from the Sistine Chapel. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Christina Rea. And our producer, Mark Blackwell, has been to the Vatican twice, and both times he says he has forgotten to go to the Sistine Chapel. So, Carolina, tell Mark about the Sistine Chapel.
The Sistine Chapel is probably the most famous space on the globe, and it's a real moment of conversion. I have been through with so many different people, so many different walks of life, so many people that are non-Christian as well. I came in with Kelsey Grammer, who came through our office one day. And
no name dropping here now, okay, Carolina? Go ahead.
He's a patron, and he looked up, and I could see tears in his eyes, and it was a most special moment, because as he came in, and people didn't even really notice him because everybody's looking up to see the ceiling and the miraculous vision that Michelangelo had. It's the most beautiful frescoed area and famous for that reason. I don't know, even know how to sell it, because it speaks for itself. I mean, even if you Google search it, you can just get a little taste of what it's like.
It's 531 years old, the Sistine Chapel. It's 130 feet long, 43 foot wide. It took Michelangelo 4 years and 3 months to do the frescoes. 15 to 30,000 people a day walk through. Carolina, have you ever been in the Sistine Chapel by yourself? And what's that like?
I have had the pleasure of being in the Sistine Chapel by myself. it's a very, the space echoes quite a bit. So when you're in by yourself, and I walked into the back door the very first time, I was just making sure that the lights were on because we had a group coming through and it was the evening, and there's only ever artificial light that they shine through the Sistine to preserve the frescoes. So I came in, it was just my own footsteps echoing. And when I realized when I walked in the door that I was the only one in there, I stopped to take it in. And in that moment, I heard the echoing of footsteps from another doorway just ahead. And I was holding my breath because I couldn't believe I was in there by myself. And I also was a little bit caught off guard when somebody else was coming through. And it happened to be a young custodian. And he didn't see me. When he walked in where the door was, I saw his profile. And he simply looked up at the ceiling and made the sign of the cross. And I was absolutely blown away. Because everyone there, the workers and the staff, everyone really cares. And we come together for faith, and down to myself that works there and another person that's there to just make sure that no one's taking flash photography, and another person that's sweeping the floor. Everyone's there for their faith.
We're talking to Carolina Rhea, the only American laywoman that works in the Vatican's Apostolic Palace. Carolina, what do you do every day in the palace?
It's an incredible experience. I never know where my day will end or where it will take me. I have had the absolute privilege of working with our patrons that are absolutely amazing and feel like family to me. They're from all over the world, and I've gotten to meet some very, very interesting people in some very interesting jobs. I also have been up at the top of the scaffolding, looking at ceilings and frescoes, literally just 9 inches above my tip of my nose. I can hear from the restorers and the curators face to face, having them describe the scent of a painting and how they could smell a little bit of mold, or tell that there was a little bit of a crack in a statue just from having brazed their fingers on the outside. It's really amazing. I've gotten to meet a lot of world leaders just walking in the door. And I get to see the Pope driving around. So that's always a highlight as well. My job takes me in the museums at night plenty of times as well. And they're just magical. And it's been a really incredible experience to work with so many different people from so many different countries.
We're talking to Carolina Rhea. In the first segment, you talked about that you got a strong faith from Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
How has your faith been affected by working in the Vatican since 2009?
I really thought that I was a person of active faith before, but living in Rome just set me on fire. My friends are a lot of the Catholic journalists around Rome, and many of the things that we do are a lot of the Catholic charities and other things that happen right there in the heart of our faith. I've met so many interesting people also outside of the church in Rome, a lot of other Americans there, actually. So I've done some charity work with the USO and the Boy and Girl Scouts, whose most of those kids are with the their parents are working at the U.S. Embassy over there. But these types of things allow me to bring my faith into action. So even if I am just working at the USO or doing other charitable acts, I don't need to tell anyone where I work on a Monday through Friday. But it's a great way of enacting my faith in other ways and helping people from all over and getting connected and getting in touch.
Let's go back to April 27th, 2014. The canonization of Pope John the 23rd and Pope John Paul II. Talk to us about that day.
Incredible day. Another incredible day. I have become a little bit... I stay away from the Vatican, let's say, on those big days. They were anticipating hundreds of thousands of people to flock to Vatican City that day. I preferred to remain at home and watch on television with a group of friends of mine, non-journalist friends of mine, and we had celebrated the Mass along with Mass on television, said a prayer, and had a big Italian lunch together. But the energy, again, from the conclave was echoed during the canonization. John Paul II, of course, being of our lifetime, of my lifetime, it was a really special moment. And it brought journalists in from everywhere, from all over the world. Again, the media was everywhere. There were backpackers in the street rolling out their sleeping bags right along the Tiber River. So it was really electric, lots of energy, lots of young people, and a great moment for the church.
As our time winds down together this evening, can you lead us in a closing prayer?
It would be my pleasure. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, dear God, please watch over and bless us, your sheep and your sinners. And please help us to live out our lives in service to others and to always remember and help those in need, the sick, the suffering, the unborn, the animals, and all of God's creations. Please help us to live out our full potential and help us to be wonderful followers of Christ.
Carolina Maria, next time you see the Pope, tell him we all said hi. Say a prayer for us.
Thank you.
You give everybody that meets you hope that there's a bright future. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Brasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.